The views and opinions expressed by the hosts on MadisonTalks.com are those of the host. That's why we do it. Give us a call. 608-210-1667. Thanks for listening.
Longtime Medicine banker Bob Schlick talked about his new book on the importance of mentors in life. Bob grew up in a Madison golfing family and was president of four well-known Madison area banks. In this book, he shares what he learned from family mentors, coaches, teachers, banking mentors, psychologists, and business mentors. Now Bob talks about these mentors, how they help shape, influence, and brighten his life with longtime Madison newspaper columnist and author Doug Moe.
Well, bless my soul, but what's wrong with me? I'm itching like a man.
Hi, I'm Doug Moe. As Mitch indicated, thanks for that introduction. He stole my thunder here. I am with Bob Schlicht, and this is actually the second time we've chatted, Bob, and I think this time we're going to concentrate a little more on your lengthy history in banking, and that's one of the most intriguing parts to me in the book is the banking history that you unearthed. But for folks who don't know or maybe missed our first chat, Mitch touched on it, but you're Madison as you can get, right? You grew up here and...
Yeah, fourth generation.
Okay. And your dad, who you identify in the book as your first mentor, was a longtime golf pro in town, right?
Yes. He was in the banking business for, or I should say the banking, the golfing business for over 50 years.
Wow.
So he started caddying at Maple Bluff when he was 9 years old, and then... stayed in the business, became an assistant pro at Maple Bluff when he was only 16 years old. It was a different time, and ended up staying in for 50 plus years.
And then you graduated high school here, and then UW,
mm-hmm.
And played some football at
yes,
UW.
Yes.
We mentioned your dad. In a way, he got you into the banking industry, if I'm remembering the book right, because didn't he reach out to a couple of banking friends of his who then helped your girlfriend at the time get in? Tell that
yes,
story.
Yes, yes. Yeah, it was kind of interesting. Dad played in the 1927 and 28 Western Open, and one of his friends that he had met when he was the assistant pro at Blackhawk in 1924 and 25 was Bob O'Malley's father. And Bob O'Malley was a legendary banker in Madison at Madison Bank and Trust, Valley Bank, and United Bank. United Bank, then Valley Bank.
Right.
But he gave my dad a ride to the tournament. So he over the years, he got to meet Bob O'Malley and Collins Ferris. And Collins Ferris was the chairman of Madison Bank and Trust and Valley Bank. And
these are two huge names in
right.
Wisconsin banking.
And the old General Ferris, I got to know him well because after the bank Valley sold to M&I, he'd come in from time to time and we'd visit. And I just enjoyed listening to his flying stories, and he ended up a general in the United States Air Force.
Wow.
And he was really one of Bob O'Malley's mentors.
And was I right about the fact that your girlfriend at the time was looking to try to break into the banking industry, and your
yes.
dad sort of at least made an introduction for her?
Yeah, her name was Joan Schneider, and she told me one day she was thinking of the banking industry. And so I asked my dad, I said, do you know anybody in banking? And he knew so many people in town because most of the bankers were golfers.
Sure.
So he said, sure, I'll make a call. I'll call Mr. Ferris and Mr. O'Malley and see, tell them a little bit about Joan, and I'm sure they'll probably hire her. And so she got the job, and today she's president of the First Business Trust Company in Madison.
Wow.
So she did pretty well.
But then you graduate. And from UW, and didn't she sort of return the favor?
She did, because she suggested that, you know, I ought to consider banking, and there was a job opening at the time, United Bank, which Bob O'Malley was the president and CEO, and Collie Ferris was the chairman at that time, and I said, gee, maybe I'll apply, and I got a pretty low-level job. I was in the stock room, and so... I looked up to the tellers. I mean, the first line people in the bank that were so important to the success of the bank, but I was delivering supplies throughout the bank, so I got to know a lot of people. And then I got a break where there was a job opening at the Affiliated Bank of Middleton, and then two of my very good mentors in my life were the president and vice president there. So they both trained me in the banking industry.
It's Don Jones and Jerry Shields?
Don Jones and Jerry Shields.
Yeah, talk a little about them.
Don was just a wonderful person, and he had worked at the Bank of Madison. And I got the job there, I think, because my old high school basketball coach, Bob Boomer Harris, right, kind of a legendary coach, he wrote a note to Don Jones. And I didn't dictate it. He came up with it. He said, oh, he's a good young man, and I think he'd do a great job for you. And Don had worked at the Bank of Madison before he went out to the Middleton Shores Bank, which became the Affiliated Bank of Middleton. So he knew Coach Harris, and that really helped me, I think, get that job.
Sure. I think I remember from my reading that one thing that really helped you there was that they had you doing a lot of different things, and you kind of learned the broad scope of the business.
Yeah, it was a total assets of the bank. I think our biggest bank now is J.P. Morgan, about $2.7 trillion. Don't quote me on that, but it's a huge bank. We were a $5 million bank, total assets. So you had to kind of do everything there, you know, sweep up the floors.
Teller.
I was a teller, and I started out as an assistant loan secretary, so I balanced the loans to the general ledger and typed up the loans, and then eventually became a loan officer at the bank. But they were just both Don Jones and Jerry Shields just great mentors, because they were trained in banking and really knew the business upside down and backwards. And usually in a small bank, you really have to know everything. And I was amazed that these two men were so sharp and knew every aspect of the business.
No better way for your long term, as it turned out.
Yes.
Though to have done all those things, right?
Because I was a teller, and I was a loan secretary, as I said, and then I learned how to balance the general ledger the loans to the general ledger, and I collected loans and did all types of loans, and they taught me how to be a commercial lender and a real estate lender and a consumer lender, and it was really just great training.
Did you like it, Bob?
I really did.
In those early days?
I did. It was really a lot of fun, and I learned a lot from them, and I still say that of the mentors I had, those were two very primary mentors.
There's one fun story about that time, I think, when your desk is in the front, and a pretty famous person walks in, right?
Yes. And, you know, it would have been, let me think of the year, it would have been in 1975, and I'm sitting at my desk minding my own business, and I look up, and the legendary quarterback from the Green Bay Packers, Bart Starr, walks in. And, you know, I think any kid in my age bracket idolized. It's probably like Tom Brady today. The young kids are watching him win Super Bowl after Super Bowl. And I guess, so I kind of panicked. I didn't know what to do. I was, you know, so I ran into Jerry Shields' office, and I said, Jerry, you'll never guess who's here. And he looked at me and said, Bob, let me guess, it's not the Easter Bunny, because it's beyond Easter. President Nixon. And this is, and I said, or he should have said former President Nixon. He said, is it Richard Nixon? And I said, no, it's Bart Starr. So Jerry immediately got up, walked out, and found out that Mr. Starr had invested in the Mattson Corporation, who built our new bank building on University Avenue in Middleton.
Okay, yeah. The book is called The Importance of Mentors in Life, and if folks are interested, Bob, how do they best find it?
Well, they could find it at barnesandnoble.com, or they could find it on Amazon Books, and you just Google The Importance of Mentors, and then my name, Robert A. Schlicht, and they'd be able to pick it up. And I've had a lot of friends that have picked it up, and I haven't had any complaints yet, which I was surprised, because I thought, you know, I'm not Mark Twain, I'm not Ernest Hemingway, so I thought, my goodness, how is this going to go? But I do have a lot of interesting Madison history, golf, banking, And I think a lot of things that my mentors told me, I think young people would really enjoy.
I agree. And I thought I was a pretty good student of Madison history, but I learned a lot, particularly about banking, I have to say. Let's trace your career a little bit more. You went, Middleton was affiliated with Bank of Madison, yes?
Yes, yes.
Right, and so eventually Hilldale, how does that all work?
Oh, yeah, it was really interesting. In 1970, the banks, Bank of Madison and Hilldale decided to create the Affiliated Bank Corporation. Hilldale was a de novo bank that was really started by the Bank of Madison. They sent some of their people out there initially to start it, and then Dick Reeson and became president eventually, and Dave Mergen came in as the executive VP, too. Very important mentors to me. But I was fortunate enough when I was at Middleton to be asked to, Don had left the organization to take a job in the bank training business throughout the country, and he's been tremendously successful. And Jerry Shields took a job after when he left the bank at the First Bank in Milwaukee, and they were based in Minneapolis, very sophisticated bank, and they both had extraordinary careers, and Jerry ended up coming back for a while, and Don came back and worked, and I got to work with him years later. But so I was asked by Dick Reeson, who was the president of the Hilldale Bank, and he was on our board, as was Paul Berge, who was the president of the Bank of Madison. I guess he was executive VP at that point, and then eventually became president. And Mr. Reeson said, hey, would you be interested in working at Hilldale? Because we have a job opening. And I thought, well, gosh, yeah, because my two mentors had gone other places, and I didn't have the loyalty that I might have had if they had stayed. And so I went over to work at Hilldale and got to know the Hilldale people. And that was a very successful bank. They ran that bank focused on the client and the customer, and they had loan officers out in front greeting the customers as they came in so they could direct them to a personal banker.
Sure.
So they were kind of legendary, and they grew, I think when they merged with the M&I, they were, oh my goodness, I'm going to say close to a $400 million bank.
I remember when they opened in 61, because my family had moved here to Madison the year before.
Oh,
in 1960,
cool.
I was 4 years old. But we lived not far from there. We lived just in Midvale Heights up the street. So it opened about the same year the shopping mall opened. And, yeah, it became a focal point for business on the west side, I think.
Yes, and I remember the first pizza I had was was a pizza shop in the Hilldale Shopping Center. Now, if I could remember the name of it.
When they opened a bowling alley right next to the bank, too, by the way.
Yeah, I remember the 48 lanes.
Yeah.
I remember going down there with my brother Pete when we had a snow day, and we met Jeff Ratter. He was going to West, and we were going to Central at the time. And there was a big snow day, so we bowled all day.
Yeah, and for folks who don't know their Madison history so well, that was really the far west side at time. I mean, there wasn't a whole heck of a lot. Past
Hilldale. And thank goodness that they developed your neighborhood.
Right. Let me ask you, Bob, on Mergen and Reeson. You talk about them as mentors. We've got a break coming up here, but maybe after the break you can talk a little about the two of them and what specifically that you learned from them. Okay?
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah, you're listening to Madison Talks. I'm Doug Moe talking to Bob Schlicht about his new book, The Importance of Mentors in Life.
Many a soldier shed his lifeblood on my blade. The bastards hung me.
MadisonTalks.com is the home of Madison's most creative talk radio. If you have a serious gift of gab, you have stories to share, political, social, or religious positions to express, contact Madison Talks to have your own 60-minute weekly podcast recorded and posted for the world to hear. Have a new book to promote? Madison Talks is the ideal place to promote it. Fly solo or line up guests for your weekly live talk session. When your 60-minute program is finished live streaming, it'll be posted as a podcast to MadisonTalks.com for listening 24/7. Take your message to the world with MadisonTalks.com. Call 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. That's 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. MadisonTalks.com, looking for your creative commentary. You're listening to MadisonTalks.com, stimulating conversation on a variety of subjects and issues that matter. Share your questions, comments, or answers with us at 608-210-1667. Now here's your host on MadisonTalks.com.
Welcome back.
Come fly with me, let's fly, let's
gee,
fly.
Imagine having Frank Sinatra on something associated with Mitch Henk. I don't know how that happened. I'm Doug Moe, happy to be here speaking with old friend Bob Schlicht about his new book, The Importance of Mentors in Life, and we're mixing in a lot of Madison history in our conversation because that's a nice large part of the book as well. Before we broke, I mentioned these two, I don't want to overuse the word legends, but certainly very important men in the banking industry, Dick Reeson and Dave Mergen. They were mentors to you, and can you talk a little about them?
Yeah, Dick Reeson had grown up in Madison, and he was an outstanding football player at Madison Edgewood High School, and went to college out of state, and he ended up working at a couple finance companies. And then in 1952, he had the opportunity to come back here to Madison, and he took a job at the Bank of Madison, and he ran the installment loan area, and then was the initiator of their charge card division, which became very very well known in this marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
And Dave Mergen actually went to the old Platteville State College, which is now UW-Platteville.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in the broadcasting business, and just I couldn't have worked with two nicer men at that time in my life. And they both had the same philosophy, customer service.
Yeah.
They arguably one of the best banks that was a de novo bank or a new bank in Madison's history. They had they grew. They had very good asset quality, and they were really good at hiring people. I thought and when I left the bank in Middleton to come over to Hilldale, I was just astounded with the talent that they had in that organization. And Dick Peterson was their head of operations, and Dick had gone to Madison Business College in the University of Wisconsin and studied business administration. And he was just so good and ran the teller operations and all the operations things in the bank.
Let me ask you, Bob, I know because as you went up the executive ladder, you became a very good recruiter of talent. I guess it depends on the position, but in a general sense, what are you looking for in the banking industry in terms of when you're trying to hire people?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. What we tried to do is we used something that we call the Style Recognition Index. And what it was, it's something I learned from the legendary Green Bay Packer quarterback Bart Starr. And that was, you should put the right person in the right job. And you do that by looking at their personality and their assertive, if they're assertive or non-assertive, if they're a quantitative person, analytical person. Are they someone like Ronald Reagan and Bill Clinton? That would be an advocate. That would be very people-oriented and assertive. So we usually tried to get the right person in the right job. We found that a lot of our finance people were analytical. They were just so good, and they were kind of more reserved, but they were very good with people. And we found some of our lenders were more outgoing, and they were assertive, so they were advocators. And then we had controllers. Those were people that were not as people-oriented, but very direct and assertive, and they could end up in jobs that were, in finance, chief operating officer, because they're very detail-oriented, and they want to get down to business.
Sure.
And then we had some facilitators, which those are the very people-oriented and non-assertive, and we had people like that throughout our organization, and a lot of them worked in marketing jobs. They didn't want to get into management because they didn't like confronting people, but they were very personable. And Bart Starr had a film that I looked at in the 70s. I think it was about 1975. He had bought a car dealership in Birmingham, Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, most people want to deal with people that have similar personality types. And there's a strategy in the sales process, it's called mirroring, where if you have someone really reserved, you better be a little reserved, because they don't want
a high pressure, right.
Even a high pressure. Right. And if you have someone like Donald Rumsfeld, the former Secretary of Defense under George W. Bush, he wants to get right down to business. You know, he's right. A controller, assertive, direct, and he doesn't want to build rapport. So if we match these people and told these people, if you've got someone like that, don't tell them, hey, what'd you think of the Packer game over the weekend or the Badger game? Because they don't have time for that. They're serious-minded, want to get down to business. So those things, I think, helped people recruit. And I think Dave Mergen and Dick Reason, both of those men, really understood that.
You, before too long, you're lured away from Hilldale by Park Bank?
Yes, yes, I was. It was a headhunter, and I was a loan officer at both Hilldale and the Bank of Middleton, my first bank, but they were looking for a number two guy in the bank to run loans, to run operations, and to run security for the bank. Let me restate, not operations. It was loans, security, and human resources. It was the best break of my life because I really had to study human resources. I knew lending, and I knew a little bit about security, but on the south side of Madison, we had some bank robberies that we had to deal with time to time. So that was probably, and I had a very wonderful mentor there in Bob Gorsuch. He was, he'd come out of the cold country, Marquette, Michigan, and he was vice president of the First National Bank of Marquette, and he had a very good mentor up there. I think his name was Elwood Mattson, if my memory serves me correct. And so Bob was a person that was very knowledgeable in operations because he was an operations cashier of the bank, but he also knew lending, very unique. So he had both sides, and so I learned a lot from him, and I was able to bring him some ideas from the mentors that I had at both Middleton and Hilldale. So it was a pretty good situation for me.
What, if any, misconceptions do you think the general public has or had about the banking business?
Well, I can tell you, that's a great question. And I can tell you, most people said, well, bankers just work 9 to 2. They're lazy. Well, you know, that might have been a long time ago, but I don't think they were lazy. I think they worked 9 to 2 because they didn't have the computers and they had to manually do all the things. And once the computers in the 70s started kicking into full gear, and then really the 80s when the PCs came around, personal computers, It helped a lot, but the bankers, I think, were hardworking all the way through, but they had to do a lot more stuff than we did, because we had more people as the banks grew larger, and then we had the computers to help us. And the best example of that is we used to have to manually spread our deposit average yields with our loan average yields, and we'd get what our net interest margin was. Well, I can remember in 1981, I was sitting at the Bank of Shorewood Hills, and we're doing that. John Bowles was our president at the time, and John says, "Well, come and watch this." And John just, you know, plugged in the numbers, and he just hit a solution button, and all of a sudden there was a solution on the bottom of the page.
Wow!
You know, and it might have taken all of us, you know, 2-3 days to do it, and all of a sudden you had it instantaneously.
You just saw the future. Right there.
I saw the future. And so I'll always have a great deal of respect for Bill Gates, I'll tell you that.
In the Park Bank section of the book, you mentioned, at least for a few pages, I found it very interesting, kind of the psychology of lending. And you talk about a woman who'd come in to you specifically
yes,
for a loan,
yes.
I think, and you had to kind of tell yourself, I'm not a social worker.
Yes, yes.
Talk about that a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, it was interesting. You know, in banking, it's tough because you have to look at the loans very carefully, because if you have bad loans, that's why banks tip over.
Right.
And we have all kinds of different loans. At Park Bank, for example, we had consumer loans. We had indirect loans. So we bought loans from the dealerships, Zimbrick and John Lancaster and Shapey Pontiac. And I could go on, Kaiser Ford. And we felt that we really had to do our homework and do look at past credit history, because bankers always believe that if a person had bad credit in the past, and if there wasn't a good reason for that, it's likely to repeat itself. And so when I got to the bank, I had a young woman that came in, and she was a new mother and had gone through a divorce, and she had her two-year-old daughter with her, and she wanted a loan for Christmas, and she didn't have a job at the time. And I thought to myself, oh, okay, and we filled out all the applications, and I said, well, I'll let you know about our decision tomorrow. When I drove home that night, I thought, boy, this is such a nice lady. She doesn't have a job, though. Right. And she's got this little kid, you know, and I'd like to just give her money myself, but I knew that wasn't the right thing to do.
Right.
But I knew I couldn't help her. So I thought about it, and I thought, well, maybe I can help her. And I'd learned this from Dick Reeson and Dave Mergen, and they said, if you turn somebody down, try to be genteel about it. Mm-hmm. Try to be professional about it. So I looked at her, and I said, you know, it's going to be really hard to make a loan to you. Do you have... Are your mother and father, or do you have an aunt and uncle that are in town? Oh, my aunt and uncle here, I know they'd help me. Well, because you don't have a job right now, what I'd like to do is get them to perhaps co-sign on the loan, and you would be ultimately responsible, but if you don't make the payment as according to the term, then they would have to make the payment. But their credit history would have to be good, and we might need some collateral depending on the size of the loan you want. And she was very appreciative, and she called me back the next day and said, thank you for giving me these ideas. It was wonderful. So she left the bank feeling good about the bank, but she said, I just don't want to ask my aunt and uncle, and I think I'm just going to wait till, you know, I find my job and do this. And I said, okay, that's fine. I understand. Okay. So I think the banking industry is being honest and straightforward and telling people, you know, exactly where they stand. And the worst thing you can do as a loan officer is keep people waiting.
Right.
And then turn them down 2 weeks later. And I always felt I had the good mentors, Jerry and Don and Bob Gorsuch, that understood that and cemented that into my brain.
The book is The Importance of Mentors in Life. I'm talking with Bob Schlicht. And I can hear the music, which means that we have a break coming, Bob. When we come back, I want to ask you about your move to the Shorewood Hills Bank, which I know is pretty close to... your earlier life up
yes.
at Black Hawk Country Club, and I know there was an American Exchange Bank becomes part of that too, and
yes.
gets some of that history will be great. So we'll be back in just a minute.
I wear the black for the poor and the beaten down, living in the hopeless, hungry side of town. I wear it for the prison.
MadisonTalks.com is the home of Madison's most creative talk radio. If you have a serious gift of gab, you have stories to share, political, social, or religious positions to express, contact Madison Talks to have your own 60-minute weekly podcast recorded and posted for the world to hear. Have a new book to promote? Madison Talks is the ideal place to promote it. Fly solo or line up guests for your weekly live talk session. When your 60-minute program is finished live streaming, it'll be posted as a podcast to MadisonTalks.com for listening 24/7. Take your message to the world with MadisonTalks.com. Call 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. That's 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. MadisonTalks.com. Looking for your creative commentary. You're listening to MadisonTalks.com, stimulating conversation on a variety of subjects and issues that matter. Share your questions, comments, or answers with us at 608-210-1667. Now here's your host on MadisonTalks.com.
Welcome back. I'm Doug Moe, talking to Bob Schlicht about his new book, The Importance of Mentors in Life. And Bob, as we went to break, I was asking you about your move eventually from Park Bank to Shorewood.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about that?
Yes. It was interesting because I was very happy at the Park Bank. And it was, Bob Gorsuch, as I said, was a friend and a mentor. And I had called my brother Butch, who was in the mortgage banking business after he got out of the golf business, and he was telling me that he'd saved a lot of money. And I thought, well, goodness, maybe I should look around a little bit. So I called one of my former mentors, and I said, you know, I'm kind of thinking maybe I'm worth a little more than I'm getting paid right now, which I guess everybody feels that way. And I talked to my dad about it. And my dad said, well, Shorewood Bank have a does it have a retirement plan? And I said, yes, they have a 401k. And, or actually, they had a another type of plan. It wasn't a 401k. But yes, they have a retirement plan, and they have a pension plan, and they have bonuses. So it was, and of course, John Mack, my former high school girlfriend, had worked for him at United Bank, and she thought the world of him, and he was running the holding company. He was president of the, and a legendary banker in Milwaukee before he came to Madison.
Sure.
And he was running the Middleton Bank, and he had started the Bank of Sherwood Hills in 1977. They started the process. So it was a new bank. It was smaller than Park Bank, but they had all the benefits of being part of a holding company. So there was a retirement plan, and
Community Banks, Inc.?
Community Banks, yes. Right, Community Banks, Inc. Yeah. And they had an ESOP plan, an employee stock ownership plan, which meant that each of the employees would get 15 up to 25% in their account based on how the bank did of bank stock. So I thought, wow, this sounds too good to be true. And then a friend of mine, Jim Smith, happened to be the vice president. And Jim had worked at the Bank of Madison when I worked at Middleton and Hilldale, so I knew him. And Jim was a legendary guy and a banker. And he was tragically killed in a car accident.
Yeah, that's in the book.
In 1988, and that was one of my saddest days. I lost my dad in '87, and it hit me right between the eyes. But Dad was 82. Jim was about 40, a little over 40, maybe 41 when he passed, and that hit me just as hard as my own dad, because he was a dear friend and a great guy and an outstanding banker who would have just gone places. He'd probably have Jamie Dimon's job right now if he were still around, because he was that type of banker. And he recruited me and said, come on over, Bob, and he told me about all the benefits. And one of the hardest days of my life was going to Bob Gorsuch and telling him that, gee, I'm thinking of going someplace else. And it upset him, obviously, you know. It kind of reminded me of Coach Boomer Harris. You know, if I would have told him I'm leaving the team, he probably would have. Oh, Bob didn't punch me, but you could tell he was a little upset. But we remained friends over the years, and with Bob Gorsuch. And Bob, I was fortunate to hire Sarah, his daughter, when she was looking for a job, and she turned out to be a great personal banker at Valley, and now M&I, and now BMO Harris.
You know, that's one of the themes. Less spoken than your mentor theme in the book, but it really came through to me reading it is not burning bridges, mm-hmm. you know, being professional and retaining connections and that sort of thing. It's not only the right thing to do, it seems to me, but it pays. It'll benefit you down the road. Right?
I agree with you. I agree with you. And that's how I was raised. And I think people really understand if you go to something better, they're happy for you. But the people that came a couple generations or a generation before me, they got very bitter. And I always said, I tried to be nice to people when they left. And I had one example of a very talented commercial lender. She was a young woman that was doing a great job for us, and she got an offer, more money at another bank. And she said, but I feel obligated to go. And I remember telling her, I said, hey, you've done such a great job here. I wish you nothing but the best. And if things don't work out for you,
sure,
please call me. We'll hire you back the same day that you call me. Right. And sure as heck, 3 months went by. It wasn't working out, and she called me back, and she came back. Yeah, so yeah. I tried to learn from my mentors, but I thought, I'm going to try to kind of look at things maybe a little differently. And that's how it was in those days. And there's just much more movement in banks than there were in the old days. And when you get into the bank history, you see a lot of people move from bank to bank even back then.
I mentioned American Exchange Bank. There's a great chapter on its history in the book. Let me ask you about, were you kind of an amateur student of banking history while you were active in the industry, or did you do most of this research kind of later on?
I was active when I was there, but the research that I got in the book, a lot of it came from, depending on the bank, Collins Ferris and Bob O'Malley were so gracious to me, and they knew that I loved history.
Okay.
So, and then Eleanor Eichmann was their assistant for a lot of years, who was just a wizard. Eleanor, and they're all gone, and they were all just fabulous people. But I can remember Bob O'Malley said, hey, I'm going to tell Eleanor to give you all of our records of Madison Trust Company, some of the board minutes and things like that, and some of the board minutes of the bank that we acquired in Menominee, Wisconsin. And Bob had written down some things, and one of the former presidents, another former president, had written down some things about the old days of Madison Bank and Trust and Madison Trust Company. So I decided that, goodness, I'd love to have that. So I read through it and read through it, and then eventually I thought, boy, this is going to be lost. This is a big part of Madison's history. And, you know, when I look at the bank, Madison Trust Company, well, who's on the board? Former senator, state senator, Fred Risser, and district attorney Fred Risser, and I thought, well, my goodness, and Bob O'Malley was very good with the current senator in Wisconsin, Senator Fred Risser,
right.
And so all these ties to me are just fascinating because you know, because if you don't dig up some of this stuff, it's lost forever. You know, there's a lot of people that don't know Senator Risser's because he's been in office for a long time, that his dad was as famous as he was.
Prominent, yeah.
Prominent,
absolutely.
Very prominent man. So he was on the Madison Trust Company board. So I've got a list of some of the directors that I wrote up. A.O. Ponick was on the board of the Madison Trust Company, and he was the president of the Commercial National Bank, which failed during the Great Depression. And his son, Bud Ponick, was president of the Commercial State Bank in Madison years later. So Phil La Follette, attorney, district attorney, later governor of Wisconsin, he was on the board of this bank. So it's kind of like a who's who in Madison. One of the board members was J.J. Fitzpatrick. And his son, Larry Fitzpatrick, who I got to know, went to school with my cousin Roth at Madison West in the 30s and was a basketball player at the UW and played with Boomer Harris. So all these things I try to talk about, and then the
Was he the Fitzpatrick, that Larry Fitzpatrick, that went out to the newspaper business? Lawrence Fitzpatrick was like editor of the State Journal.
I don't know if it's
the same guy.
I think it's a different man.
Okay.
And this man was really... he ran the Fitzpatrick Lumber Company.
Okay, different.
Different family, yeah. Because a pretty common name. I knew a lot of the Fitzpatrick because they were great people. Went to school at Marine. So.
Well, as I've said more than once, the history part is really one of the most fascinating parts of the importance of mentors in life. I want to move you forward a little bit, Bob, to we don't want to leave out, we're going to talk about the deficit and your solution to it, but I want to get you... to Valley Bank, which was one of the big mergers.
Yes.
Right? They acquired CBI?
Yes, that's correct.
And then, go ahead, though.
I did want to mention one thing.
Of course.
William Eveu, the former founder and publisher of the Cap Times, was on the Madison Trust Company board. And I think he might have been, I don't know if he went to form the Capital Times. I don't know what year the Capital Times, but
1917.
Okay, all right.
So this is their 100th anniversary year.
Okay, all right, good. So I thought that was kind of cool that he was on that board.
Absolutely.
And a legendary man. I mean, I'll tell you. Thank goodness we got him in Madison, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And Valley Bank.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll tell you, that was a very interesting merger. Community Banks, Inc., John Mack's leadership was phenomenal, and his right-hand person was Dr. Bob Kramer, who was a professor of finance at the University of Wisconsin, and expert. He taught bank management at the university, a guru in the finer points of the industry, a golfer in his own right. One of his mentors was Francis Gallet, who was in the State Golf Hall of Fame, and that's where Bob learned the game. And he's got this wonderful swing, putting stroke. I said, who taught you to putt this way? And he said, Francis Gallet.
Wow.
You know, he makes all these putts. And every time we play, he usually beats me. And occasionally, I think, if Bob's listening to this, Bob, I think maybe twice, and you've got me, you've won 8 times, and I've won twice, I think. And I think you were sick one time, too, Bob, if he's listening. So John Mack assembled this great group of people at the Bank of Middleton to help him, and then he did a de novo bank, the Bank of Shorewood Hills, in 1977 and 78. They started in 78, but he started in 1977. And then he acquired the American Exchange Bank and the Monona Grove State Bank, and then later the Brooklyn State Bank, and then the Farmers and Merchants Bank in Richland Center, Wisconsin.
Okay.
So he had done just a great job, and he had worked for Bob O'Malley. John Mack was his vice president and came in, and John had worked in Milwaukee for a number of years, so he was as talented in operations as he was in lending. Very unusual combination, because usually you know one or the other. And the only reason I knew a little bit about operations, I was in such a small bank, you had to.
Right. As mergers go, that one went fairly smoothly, didn't
yes,
it?
The, yes, it did. Yeah. It was quite interesting, Doug, because the merger of Valley Bank was really helped by Bob O'Malley. He was vice chair of the corporation and the chairman and CEO of this local bank, the Valley Bank of Madison. And it went very smoothly because he knew John Mack so well, because John had worked for him for a number of years, and Collie Ferris.
And you liked the guy that was actually above Bob, and I'm not remembering his name at Valley, the chairman or the of CEO, was it?
Oh, yes.
Appleton?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes, and his name was Peter Platten,
okay.
And he worked underneath Gus Zilke.
Yeah, there was Gus that I remember, that you tell an anecdote where you called him Mr. Zilke or something,
oh,
and he got
yes.
mad, right?
Oh, Gus was legendary in the Fox Cities and really throughout Wisconsin, and the nicest guy. He reminded me of my dad. A lot of these people remind me, because he had such a kind soul, but he was tough as nails. You know, he had both sides going.
Right.
But he was a captain in the United States Navy, and I think he won several awards for taking on unfriendly fire, and I have that in the book, and I can't remember. He won a lot of awards as a naval officer, and he commanded I think more than one ship when he was in service during World War II.
Sure.
And so just a really good guy. And then Pete Platten took over when Gus retired, and Pete was from Green Bay. But I have a little history of their families, which is kind of interesting. Gus's father was a car dealer, and he did other things. But he's, you know, and you can imagine in the 1900s, but in about 1914, he started buying banks in the Fox Cities. And then Pete Platten's grandfather was also in the banking business. So Pete came from Green Bay. And they acquired his company in Green Bay, and then Pete became the number two guy and was a chief operating officer of Valley for years.
Okay.
But we seemed to click with them because they liked John Mack, and they liked our organization in Madison because we were a lot like theirs, the way we did things.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we had an indirect lending division. We had a very sophisticated mortgage, residential mortgage operation, where we sold the loans on the secondary market. Thanks to Bob Kramer's expertise and understanding financial derivatives, we were able to protect ourselves during the time when they closed and when we had to sell them. So, but they liked us well, and we liked them because they kind of said, "Hey, we're looking for you to, you know, make some money here and get this bank." Returning over 1% on assets, and that was John's cupcake. I mean, he knew how to do that, and he asked me to do a few things about cutting expenses, and I had done that at American Exchange, cut expenses, so I kind of knew how to do that. And I think in the election, one of the candidates said zero-based budgeting, and that's what I always did. Start over, because there's so many expenses that you have in a operating right. statement that
Some people don't remember why they're there.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right if you start over.
We have a break coming up, Bob. I want to, out of the break, I'd just like to finish up with, I know M&I eventually acquires Valley, and then we'll go into some other areas, including your thoughts on the federal deficit.
Okay? Yes. Yep. Okay, sounds
great. The book is The Importance of Mentors in Life. We'll be back.
She was a black-haired beauty with big dark eyes and points all her own, sitting way up high.
MadisonTalks.com is the home of Madison's most creative talk radio. If you have a serious gift of gab, you have stories to share, political, social, or religious positions to express, contact Madison Talks to have your own 60-minute weekly podcast recorded and posted for the world to hear. Have a new book to promote? Madison Talks is the ideal place to promote it. Fly solo or line up guests for your weekly live talk session. When your 60-minute program is finished live streaming, it'll be posted as a podcast to MadisonTalks.com for listening 24/7. Take your message to the world with MadisonTalks.com. Call 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. That's 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. MadisonTalks.com, looking for your creative commentary. You're listening to MadisonTalks.com, stimulating conversation on a variety of subjects and issues that matter. Share your questions, comments, or answers with us at 608-210-1667. Now here's your host on MadisonTalks.com.
Welcome back. I'm Doug Moe. Talking with Bob Schlicht about his new book, The Importance of Mentors in Life, a book that is chock full of Madison history and banking history and wonderful anecdotal stories from Bob's life and career. You can get it at BarnesandNoble.com, Amazon.com, and I urge you to do that. It's a great read. Bob, out of the break, or going to break, I should say, we had gotten your career to Valley, but I know there's one more component that we should at least mention, which is Valley was acquired by M&I in, I think, 94, if I'm remembering right.
Yes, that's correct.
Merger was a little more difficult.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting because a few things happened during the course of the merger, and one of them was that they were a little different the way they operated. I think more of a centralized organization, which they became later, but kind of had a lot to say with what was going on in Madison. And that was different from Valley. Valley was kind of, hey, you do your thing and we're going to hold you accountable. But the M&I Corporation just had a wonderful history.
And you recount that.
And I've got a lot of history. And when Jim Wigdale and Dennis Kester were running it, I think they did very well. And I think that, and historically they'd done very well, the three Pulicker family members were presidents of the bank. John Pulicker in the 20s, and then his son Albert took over, and then Jack Pulicker, who was another legendary banker, who took over. And I got to meet him a couple of times before he passed, but just really highly regarded by all the people within the M&I organization. And I think at the time, you know, Jim Wigdale, Dennis Kester, Tom Bolger, all these people really liked Mr. Pulicker.
And the end of, just to kind of put a period on it, of M&I kind of coincided, or maybe directly coincided, with the recession, the terrible economic turn in 07, 08.
It was sad to watch because I had retired from the bank voluntarily in 2006.
Right.
And I didn't see the recession coming. And that recession from 2007 to 2009, I still say they call it the Great Recession. I think it was a depression because in all my years in the banking industry, 33 all in, I never saw housing drop the way it was dropping in Madison, Wisconsin. And then you had the stock market dropping. You'd go to small towns and you'd see, you know, if someone was in the car business, had a used car dealer situation or a new car dealership, They were struggling. Yeah. Almost every industry, the real estate industry, was struggling.
Yeah.
So commercial real estate, that really...
And so that's going to impact the bank, obviously.
Yeah.
And I want to make sure that we get to one thing here, because there's, in the book, there are some little sidebar chapters, almost I would call them, and a lot of them are gems. And one of them is about the federal deficit. It's something you've thought a lot about.
Yes.
And you actually propose a possible solution.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting. I've been watching this since for the lot of years, because I realized inside the banking industry, we had to make sure we had plenty of capital and we couldn't get out of whack with our problem loans. So we were watching capital adequacy. We were watching our asset quality, loans and investment. We were watching our managers, and if they didn't do a good job, out the door they went. But we were fortunate. We had some really good managers. We were watching earnings. We were watching liquidity. And then we looked at what if, you know, from an asset liability management standpoint, what if rates do this or do that? And it's been frustrating me for a long time. And I go back to 2011 in August when Standard & Poor's lowered the rating on the United States of America. When I heard it on the radio, I thought, that's fake news. There's no way. They went from a AAA rating to a AA+ rating. And I think Belgium was another country that that had that type of rating, AA+. And it hasn't changed. And the head of the S&P at the time said, he predicted correctly that the rating would not come back anytime soon. And that was 2011. So when I was watching the debates, and I watched him very carefully with Senator Clinton and Mr. Trump at the time, and I thought to myself, well, when are they going to talk about the deficit?
Right.
So they got to debate number three, and they were each asked the question, and they both avoided it.
We've only got a couple minutes, Bob, so I'm going to ask you, and I know it's hard to do in just a couple minutes, but give us your outline of what might be done.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of using Willie Nelson, and we were listening to him earlier in the show, and I always liked Willie. But he started the Farm Aid in 1985, and the Farm Aid has raised nearly $50 million in that period of time. And I think of what happened with Senator Clinton right before the election, when she had, I think it was some of the famous stars, Jay-Z, and I'm trying to think who else performed.
You're going to call on celebrities and successful people.
Successful people to come and do programs throughout the United States in all the major facilities. And I think we could generate not enough money to reduce the deficit, but to dramatically reduce it. And Obama created something in 2010. It was a deficit reduction committee, and he had Alan Simpson and Erskine Bowles kind of co-chairing that. And they came up with some ideas to reduce our deficit by $2.5 trillion. And I think Congressman and Speaker of the House now, Paul Ryan, was on that committee. And they came close to getting it passed, but it didn't pass in Congress. And it was some really good ideas. But Canada has done some things. In the mid-90s, they reduced their deficit markedly by cutting back on expenses. And Canada has right now, I think, 17% of their GDP is all they have in their debt.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a small number, and the
it's doable. In other words,
yes.
if your mind and
yes.
heart is in it.
And I think people would really enjoy this part of the book, because
yeah.
they'll see what the plan is and how I came about it. And I think, and I'm going to work on it. And I'm talking to people right now to see if we can get something going.
The book, again, is The Importance of Mentors in Life. Happy to have been talking with my friend Bob Schlicht, and I encourage you to try to look for the book at Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com, and you'll get a great dose of Madison history and banking, and as I said, some fun sidebars, too. So thanks for listening.
happy day when you and I think it's one and two suppose goodbye. You think it over, yes, think it over. A lonely heart grows cold and old.